Nathan, thanks. 5:07 on Wall Street. Time to bring in Michael Barr now with more on what else is going on in New York and around the world.
John, thank you very much, sir. The bad news, the heat wave continues in the tri-state area. Yep, the good news, it ends tonight. Bloomberg meteorologist Rob Carolyn has the latest.
Good morning, Michael. We have a heat advisory in effect for the tri-state area until 8 p.m. this evening. The heat advisory, though, the last one of the week. It looks like temperatures are going to cool off quite a bit as we head through the remainder of the week. Today, we're up around 95. Tomorrow, it's 85 and 85 again on Thursday. Then only the 80 to 85 on Friday with much less humidity. So we're definitely going to be breaking the heat wave. Michael?
Thanks, Rob. Con Ed is asking residents in parts of Brooklyn and Queens to curb their energy use as high heat sears New York City. The utility asked homes and businesses in the affected areas to refrain from using power-hungry appliances, including washers, dryers, and microwaves, until the crew completes repairs. It also requested that residents only use one air conditioner. President Biden extended help and the FEMA checkbook to flood-soaked eastern Kentucky as he visited storm-damaged areas. The president toured water-demolished neighborhoods where he immediately issued federal disaster declarations so they could rebuild from last week's deadly storms. After meeting with families impacted by the flooding in the town of Lost Creek, President Biden says he will be back to help them rebuild from the flooding.
And we're all Americans. Everybody has an obligation to help. We have the capacity to do this. It's not like it's beyond our control.
The president also preaching unity in the response to the disaster. The Pentagon says it believed that as many as 80,000 Russian troops have been killed or wounded in under 6 months of fighting in Ukraine. Undersecretary of Defense for Policy Colin Kahl says it's pretty remarkable considering that the Russians have achieved none of Vladimir Putin's objectives at the beginning of the war. China has extended military drills near Taiwan's airspace and seas today. Taiwan says China is using war drills to plan a future invasion. Beloved actress and singer Olivia Newton-John has died. She was famous for hits like Let Me Be There, Physical, and her breakout role in Grease. Olivia Newton-John was 73. Global News, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg, John.
Michael, thank you. Guys, now 5:10 of Wall Street. It's time for the Bloomberg Sports Update. And good morning, John Stanchow.
All right, good morning, John Tucker. When the Yankees were flying high first half of the season, they were relatively healthy. That's no longer the case. Giancarlo Stanton on the injured list. So is Luis Severino. Michael King done for the year. And last night in Seattle, Matt Carpenter fouled the ball off his foot. It's a fracture that might end what's been a remarkable season for Carpenter. He had hit only 7 home runs over his previous 2 seasons. He joined the Yankees in late May. His slugging percentage since then is the best in the major leagues. The Yankees beat the Mariners 9-4 to end a 5-game losing streak. Josh Donaldson with his best game of the season. 2 doubles, a home run. He drove in 3. So did Andrew Benintendi, who had struggled since his acquisition. Jameson Taillon won 7 innings, allowed only 3 hits. He's now 11-2. At Citi Field, Mets beat the Reds. They made it 13 of their last 15. 2-run homer in the first inning by Starling Marte, and the Mets put it away in the 8th.
The pitch, swing and a drive, deep to right, back goes Aquino, onto the track, near the fence, reaches up, can't get it, it bounces off his glove, in the score from second is Cata, here comes McNeil around third to score, digging for third is Naquin, he's in with a triple, and the Mets have a 5-1 lead.
And that was the final WCBS to call the Tyler Naquin triple. Chris Bassett worked 8 innings, did not allow an earned run. The Mets now lead the Braves by 7 games. A key Jet has suffered an injury at training camp. Tackle Mekhi Becton hurt his knee, same one that kept him out last season. He had an MRI, now headed for further tests. An eventful day for the Giants. Several fights broke out. That does sometimes happen at training camp. Linebacker Tay Crowder and center John Feliciano among those involved. Giants have their preseason opener Thursday at New England. John Stachowiak with Bloomberg Sports. John?
All right, thanks, John. And just ahead of the cash open, Wall Street, Dow futures right now, they're up 67 points. The S&P E-mini futures up about 8 points, and the NASDAQ futures 12 points higher. And as we look at the 2-year yield, 3.21, the 10-year, 2.78. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. But just ahead, we'll speak with Wendy Schiller, director of the Talmadge Center for American Politics and Policy at Brown University, for analysis and perspective on the FBI raid at the former president's Mar-a-Lago estate.
markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business App, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
I'm Nathan Hager. Futures are holding steady this morning. The dollar is slipping as investors bet strong earnings can continue despite recent disappointments. We check the markets every 15 minutes during the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures right now up 7 points. Dow futures are higher by 69. NASDAQ futures a gain of 11 points. The 10-year Treasury is down 7/32. The yield 2.78%. Yield on the 2-year is 3.21%. NYMEX crude is down 1.2%, down $1.11 at $89.65 a barrel. COMEX gold is up 0.1% or $2.50 at $1,807.70 an ounce. The euro 1.0245 against the dollar. The yen is at 134.90. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. The FBI has searched former President Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago estate as part of an investigation into whether he took classified records from the White House to his Florida residence. Trump says agents opened up a safe at his home and describes their work as an unannounced raid that he likened to prosecutorial misconduct. We'll have more on this straight ahead. Teachers and staff return to work today at public schools in Uvalde, Texas. It follows the deadly mass shooting in May at Robb Elementary School. In baseball, the Yankees beat the Mariners 9-4. The Mets beat the Reds 5-1. The Nationals and A's lost. The Orioles and Giants won. Global news, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg. John.
And Michael, thank you. 519 on Wall Street. We are live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. As Michael mentioned, stunning development in the ongoing legal battles involving former President Trump. For the first time in history, a search warrant executed at the home of a former president. And let's find out more this morning, joined by Joe Matthew, the host of Bloomberg's Sound On. Joe, thanks for being with us. Mm-hmm. There are a couple of ways that law enforcement can get stuff that they want. Mm-hmm. Either through a subpoena or a search warrant. And the distinction is important here.
Well, it is. And this is, you know, we want to be careful here in the way we're framing this. People are using the word raid because that's what Donald Trump called it in his statement to the media last night. This was a search warrant facilitated by the Secret Service. So I just want to be clear. They weren't knocking down doors. There were no battering rams. People were not taken into custody. And this brings us back to January when the National Archives first went in to retrieve 15 boxes at that point of documents and items from Mar-a-Lago that should have been turned over when Trump left the White House. At that time, they said they were continuing to search for additional records, and they have been asking the Trump former White House, the former administration, to hand these over ever since. So what we saw yesterday, just to be clear, was a very deliberate search facilitated by the Secret Service, approved by a judge, and you cannot get a search warrant like this unless you not only make the case of probable cause, but you also have to be specific about what you are looking for. Now, granted, they took a lot of boxes out of there. They got into the safe. They could be looking for as little as one document, as far as we know. If it is top secret, that's all it would take to trigger that search yesterday.
Is it implicit that not going the route of a subpoena, they thought that they wouldn't get it otherwise?
That's possible. We don't know this. We have to remember, of course, that there have been a lot of reports about Donald Trump disposing of documents, tearing them up, flushing them down the toilet. And in fact, some of the documents that were provided to the National Archives at the beginning of the year, as I mentioned in January, in fact, had been taped back together. They were torn up, thrown away, and they had to be reconstructed at the White House. All of that violates the Presidential Records Act.
Do we know what the documents they were looking for possibly relate to?
We really don't. And this is where it gets interesting here. Like, look, just about every administration, people should also understand this, have had some violation of the Presidential Records Act. The Washington Post reminds us this morning, Bill and Hillary Clinton had to return $28,000 in furnishings that they said were gifts, were actually property of the White House. We've just never seen anything on this scale. So it does imply that this is important. This is a top secret memo. It could be a series of documents. And it also, John, could be tied potentially to the Department of Justice's January 6th investigation. That remains completely unclear to us, and we have to be honest about how little we know.
Okay, so what is the former president? president, and what are his supporters saying at this point?
Well, it's, you know, it's a doom scroll this morning on Twitter. Kevin McCarthy was quick to tweet, this is the minority leader, that he promises an investigation into this. He will be specifically investigating Merrick Garland. He tweeted to him, he said, put the date on your calendar, assuming that he becomes speaker after the midterms. New oversight to the FBI, Marjorie Taylor Greene, among others, in Trump's ecosphere, if you will, are calling for defunding the FBI. Not unlike defund the police. Now, this is the new defund the FBI. Matt Gaetz, another Trump supporter, congressman, refers to January 6th as the Fedsurrection. So this really reinforces this allergy that Trump supporters have to federal law enforcement.
Well, can the former president metaphorically set fire to the Justice Department with his supporters to evade responsibility?
Ask the question again. Could he do what?
Could he metaphorically set fire to the Justice Department at this point?
Well, if he got reelected, I suppose, but I'm not sure. If you mean Donald Trump, I'm not sure what sway he would have over the Justice Department right now. If Republicans take the majority in the House, you're going to see a lot of hearings, but that does not necessarily do anything to change the case for Donald Trump.
And what does it do to change the case possibly for the general election?
That's a great question, and it's pretty difficult to roll out more than 2 years at the moment here. I would remind you, though, that Christopher Wray, the FBI director, was selected by President Trump after he fired Director Comey. And although you would not necessarily expect such a bold move 100 days before the midterm elections for violating the Presidential Records Act, never mind the 2024 elections.
All right, Jill, thanks very much. Well, sure, before you go, what do we look for next?
Well, gosh, that's a great question. Look, Donald Trump would also, it strikes me, have a copy of that warrant. I think that we will have to learn at some point what it is they were looking for. But knowing that they have laptops, hard drives, documents, and so forth, there's going to be weeks, if not months, of downloading and ingesting data. It could be some time before we understand, unless, of course, the FBI is a little leaky, and then we might know as soon as today.
Joe, always a pleasure. Appreciate it. Joe Matthew, host of Bloomberg Sound On. As we look at markets right now, ahead of the cash open on Wall Street, the futures indicate a higher open. The Dow right now, Dow futures up 61 points. That's a rise of 0.2%. S&P E-mini futures, they're up 6 points. That's up 0.2%. And the tech-heavy NASDAQ E-mini futures right now, 4 points higher. And as we look at treasuries, the two-year yield, 3.22. The 10-year yield, 2.78. You are listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Daybreak brought to you by PPAC Private Wealth Management. PPAC Private Wealth Management knows that a portfolio is more than a collection of assets. It's a path to your future. Visit PPACPrivate.com. Begin your financial legacy today.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130. To Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 991. To Boston, Bloomberg 1061. To San Francisco, Bloomberg 960. To the country, Sirius XM Channel 119. And around the globe, the Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm John Tucker.
And I'm Nathan Hager. We are about 4 hours away from the open of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour, beginning with a stunning political development overnight. Former President Donald Trump says federal agents raided his residence at Mar-a-Lago. It's part of an investigation into whether the former president took classified documents from the White House. We get analysis from Robert Mintz, partner at McCarter & English.
It's absolutely shocking and completely unprecedented. This would require approval from the highest levels of the Department of Justice. Merrick Garland, the Attorney General himself, would certainly have had to have been a part of this decision and have signed off on this before going to a federal judge.
Attorney Robert Mintz says the search warrant is, quote, the nuclear bomb in the arsenal of prosecutors. The search stems from a National Archives request about the transfer of presidential documents to Mar-a-Lago. And we get more from Bloomberg political contributor, former GOP strategist Rick Davis.
There is a penalty associated with violating this provision. It says that if you're convicted of violating this rule of holding these documents, especially top secret documents, you'll forfeit your office and be disqualified from holding any other office under the United States.
Rick Davis says this investigation adds to the former president's legal worries, which include a separate grand jury probe into efforts to overturn the 2020 election. Donald Trump, meantime, says he's being targeted to derail another run for the White House. More on this developing story throughout the morning here on Bloomberg Radio. But first, let's turn to the markets for a moment. Right now, we have futures. They are mixed after yesterday's session, which saw the S&P 500 give up a 1% gain to close little change. Treasury yields are higher. Stocks in Europe and Asia are mixed, and the dollar weakening this morning.
Well, shares of Novavax, John, are down about 30% in early trading. That's after the drug maker slashed its revenue forecast. Bloomberg's Renita Young joins us live with the details. Good morning, Renita.
Good morning, Nathan. Novavax expects sales this year to be between $2 billion and $2.3 billion. That's about half of the earlier estimate of $4 billion to $5 billion for the year. And it's all because its COVID-19 vaccine, which already trailed competitors getting to market, failed to live up to expectations. Demand for its vaccine fell both in the U.S. and globally. Novavax also reports second quarter losses wider than analysts' expectations. Live in New York, I'm Renita Young, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Renita, thank you. Futures are mixed this morning. S&P futures up 3 points. Dow futures up 47. NASDAQ futures down 5 points. Local headlines and a check of sports next. This is Bloomberg.
All right, thanks, Nathan. 5:33 on Wall Street. Time to bring in Michael Barr with more of what else is going on in New York and around the world.
John, thank you very much, sir. Con Ed is asking residents in parts of Brooklyn and Queens to curb their energy use as high heat sears New York City. The utility reduced voltage by 8% to protect equipment, while crews make unspecified repairs in several communities that are home to about 190,000 customers. A heat advisory is in place for the area until 8 p.m. tonight. President Biden and First Lady Jill Biden toured the devastation in eastern Kentucky, where at least 37 people were killed during the flooding last week. After meeting with families impacted by the flooding in the town of Lost Creek, President Biden vows to support Kentucky however long it takes to recover from the flooding.
I don't want any Kentuckian telling me you don't have to do this for me. Oh, yeah, we do. You're an American citizen. We never give up. We never stop. We never bow. We never bend. We just go forward. And that's what we're going to do here.
The president is sending FEMA money for people to help rebuild. China has extended its schedule of military drills around Taiwan. Bloomberg's Ed Baxter reports the U.S. is saying Beijing needs to be careful.
President Joe Biden says he is not worried, but is concerned, while spokeswoman Karine Jean-Pierre says they can't continue the way they are.
They are provocative, irresponsible, and raise the risk of miscalculation.
And Undersecretary of Defense for Policy Colin Call says the U.S. is not going to pull back.
What's important for us right now is to make sure that Beijing understands that our forces in the region will continue to operate.
Call says China should be very careful to protect against any miscalculations. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Voters would choose a Republican nominee for Wisconsin governor today. Tim Michaels, backed by former President Trump, is up against former Lieutenant Governor Rebecca Clefish, backed by former Vice President Mike Pence. The winner faces Democratic Governor Tony Evers. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts from more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, John.
Michael, thank you. And it's 5:35 on Wall Street. It's time for the Bloomberg Sports Update. Good morning, John Stanshower.
All right, John, much-needed win for the Yankees. They had just gotten swept in St. Louis and lost five in a row, only 9 wins in 25 games. They won in Seattle 9-4. Josh Donaldson had a big game, 4 hits, 2 doubles, a home run, drove in 3, and Aaron Judge, homer to the ninth. That's number 44. Jameson Taillon went to 11-2, but the win was costly. Matt Carpenter broke his left foot, fouling a pitch off.
It's obviously not ideal. I mean, you know, pretty disappointing, but I my mindset is that this won't be the end for me here this year. I mean, I'm hopeful that I can come back and contribute, and you know, don't have a timeline yet, but I'm hopeful for the best.
Carpenter's been amazing since his debut in late May, batting over 300 with 15 home runs. Speaking of amazing, Mets made it 13 the last 15 at Citi Field, 5-1 over Cincinnati. Before the Reds got an out, Mets led 2-0 on a Starling Marte homer. Chris Bassett sharp in 8 innings, and the Mets now lead the NL East by 7. At Jets training camp, tackle Mekhi Becton re-injured the knee that kept him out most of last season. Several reports that Kevin Durant met with Josai and told the Nets owner either trade me or fire coach Steve Nash and general manager Sean Marks, and Sai has already said he's not firing them. So the trade talks continue with Boston, Miami, and Toronto seen as the most likely destinations for Durant, who has yet to start the four-year, near $200 million contract he agreed to a year ago. It's not known why he wants Nash out. The feeling had always been that KD was the one who wanted the Nets to hire him. John Stashammer, Bloomberg Sports. John?
All right, John, thanks very much. It's 5:37 on Wall Street. Time now for the Tri-State Business Report. Here's Ed Curry.
New York City's hotel industry is starting to come back from the dark days of the pandemic. Hotel occupancy tax revenue more than quadrupled to $140 million from the second quarters of 2020 and 2021. The second quarter of 2022 total neared levels seen in the second quarter of 2019. Riders are not returning to New York City subways in enough numbers to stop a worsening cash crisis. Officials from the MTA plan to sit down with lawmakers and labor groups to begin negotiations on new sources of funding and cost cutting. They say it's too early to talk about specific options. In New Jersey, the governor has signed a law prohibiting tax preparers from engaging in certain practices involving refund anticipation checks and loans. It includes prohibiting preparers from requiring clients to enter into a refund anticipation check agreement to complete a tax return. At your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report, I'm Ed Corey.
All right, thanks, Ed. 5:38 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. And let's check in now with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Steve Potusk, and on KNX in Los Angeles, we're talking about the co-founder of Whole Foods starting a chain of vegetarian restaurants and wellness centers first in Southern California.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on KTRH in Houston. Whole Foods co-founder John Mackey is planning to open a chain of plant-based restaurants and wellness centers.
I'm Gina Cervetti, and for WBBM in Chicago, I'm reporting that new deliveries of Boeing 787 Dreamliner are finally set to take off again.
I'm Stephen Carroll on Bloomberg DA. AB Digital Radio in London. We've been reporting on British retail sales rising in July, driven by higher prices and hot weather.
I'm Ed Corey on WTAM in Cleveland. I'm reporting Amazon has opened its Brooklyn, Ohio delivery center.
It's 5:39 on Wall Street.
The following is an editorial from Bloomberg Opinion.
This editorial was written by the Bloomberg Editorial Board. The Bank of England startled analysts last week with its unexpectedly bleak assessment of the UK's medium-term prospects. Its main projection shows a shallow but protracted recession with essentially no growth in output over the next 3 years and inflation peaking at more than 13% before the end of 2022. Officials rightly emphasize the uncertainty attached to such projections. Yet when all is said and done, one thing stands out. With Britain politically paralyzed and still awaiting the appointment of its next prime minister, this could hardly have come at a worse time. In recent weeks, the Tories' contenders to lead the country have been mostly debating their rival brands of conservatism. But the UK's looming economic challenges demand practical solutions. Whichever candidate prevails in September will need to start delivering them. This editorial was written by the Bloomberg Editorial Board. For more Bloomberg Opinion, please go to Bloomberg.com/opinion or O-P-I-N go on the Bloomberg Terminal.
This has been Bloomberg Opinion.
And Bloomberg Opinion editorials can be heard every weekday at this time. And terminal customers, you can read more at OPINGO. This is Daybreak. And futures this morning turned mixed. The Dow futures up 46, S&P futures up 3, and the NASDAQ futures right now down 7 points. Just ahead, Dan Morris from BNP Paribas.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business App, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
I'm Nathan Hager. Futures are holding steady this morning. The dollar is slipping as investors bet a strong earnings performance can continue despite recent disappointments. European stocks are falling this morning. We check the markets every 15 minutes during the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are up 5 points. Dow futures up 59. NASDAQ futures are lower by 2 points. The DAX in Germany is down 0.6%. The CAC in Paris is lower by 0.2%. The 10-year Treasury is down 8/32. The yield 2.78%. Yield on the 2-year 3.22%. NYMEX crude is down 0.8% or 77 cents at $89.99 a barrel. COMEX gold little changed, up 30 cents, 18.05.40 an ounce. The euro, 1.0238 against the dollar. The pound, 1.2122. The yen is at 134.90. Bitcoin down 2% at $23,600. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Nathan, thank you very much. An explosive development. Federal investigators searched the Florida residence of Donald Trump as part of an investigation into whether he took classified documents from the White House when he left office. Trump was in New York City at the time of the search. More on this story straight ahead. The U.S. announced $4.5 billion in additional direct budgetary support to Ukraine. It will also add $1 billion more in military aid drawn from existing Pentagon inventory. In baseball, the Yankees beat the Mariners 9-4. The Mets beat the Reds 5-1. The Nationals and A's lost. The Orioles and Giants won. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts from more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Okay, Michael, thank you. We're coming up to 5:49 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. Time now for our daily Bloomberg Law Brief, exploring legal issues in the news. And today we are looking at the FBI search of former President Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago residence. Agents combed through his Florida home as part of an investigation into whether he took classified documents from the White House. For more on the legal and political implications, Bloomberg's June Grosso speaks with Robert Mintz, a partner at McCarter & English, and Bloomberg political contributor Jeannie Shanzano. Let's listen in.
People have criticized Merrick Garland, the attorney general, for going too slow on this investigation. He keeps saying that no one is above the law. Is this a signal? I think there's no turning back from this, that the gloves are off.
Oh, yes. This really raises the bar for federal prosecutors, which is not to suggest that every time a search warrant is executed, that there will necessarily be federal charges brought down the road. Remember that this only means that there was probable cause of a violation of federal law at a particular location. But probable cause is a long way from beyond a reasonable doubt, which is what prosecutors would have to satisfy in order to charge the former president or, frankly, anybody else with a crime based upon this evidence. So it's a tool the prosecutors use to gather evidence, but on the other hand, it is the most intrusive and heavy-handed tool the prosecutors have in order to gather evidence. And again, it's not something that a judge will sign off on lightly. He or she would have to be satisfied that not only the evidence was there, but there was some basis to assume that a less intrusive means, such as a subpoena, would not give the prosecutors the evidence they are seeking.
Jeannie, I'm wondering, looking at the statement that Trump has written, does he see this as a political opportunity?
He does. I mean, I think this is part of the stunning aspect of this, is that this information was released by Donald Trump via his PAC. And much of what we're hearing, and we have heard for some time, is that if he decided to announce early that he was going to run for the presidency in 2024, it was likely going to be for legal reasons and not necessarily for political reasons. And, you know, another aspect of this, and again, this is so early, we have to be very careful here, is that if there was a conviction as it pertained to what we think that they are looking into regarding these records, the person who was charged, and if that was Donald Trump, that's a big if, would not be able to run for office in the future. So that's another really, really important aspect of this story. And again, I don't want to get too far afield because, of course, we're still very early and don't have a lot of information as to exactly what they were looking for. And even if it pertained to the president, if there was going to be, you know, anything pertaining to him. But that's another aspect of this record sort of charge.
And that was Bloomberg political contributor Jeannie Shanzano and McCarter and English partner Robert Mintz speaking with Bloomberg's June Grosso. Catch more plus analysis of the latest legal news by subscribing to the Bloomberg Law Podcast or downloading the show at Bloomberg.com/podcasts. And attorneys can find exceptional legal research and business development tools at BloombergLaw.com and on the Bloomberg terminal at BLaw Go. John.
All right, Nathan, thanks very much. It is 5:52 on Wall Street. Let's shift our focus now to the markets. Futures, they have turned mixed to little change as traders await Wednesday's inflation report, trying to gauge the path of the Federal Reserve tightening ahead. Well, let's get you set up this morning for the trading day ahead with Daniel Morris, the Chief Market Strategist at BNP Paribas. Dan, good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us. Rate expectations have jumped. So, why hasn't it resulted in a reversal in equities?
Yeah, that's what's interesting about what's occurred so far, certainly in contrast to the pattern that we had at the beginning of the year. Then the story was higher than expected inflation, higher levels of Fed fund rates, and then certainly a compression in the multiples, notably for growth stocks. That's not happening yet, but it seems to me still the clearest risk out there. You know, it'd be great if we got a pleasant inflation surprise on Wednesday that the numbers came in lower than expectations. That hasn't happened in a very long time. But barring that, even if they come in as expected, that number's still pretty high. It's going to be over 6% for core inflation, core CPI, which then suggests the Fed has got to do more. And they've been signaling that anyway, and the markets generally just seem to ignore that, but that's the key risk.
And at the end of the day, it's how much companies are making. As far as the earnings analysis goes, it has not been a bad earnings season. What is your take?
Well, it wasn't, I mean, certainly not a great season, but there were so many worries coming in. You know, certainly a lot of people anticipating bigger margin squeezes given how high inflation has been and all the problems we know that you have still with supply chains and labor. But earnings, you know, still beat expectations. Just a parenthesis, though, they were even better in Europe, and that doesn't happen very often. So I want to highlight the fact that European corporates, again, even with the bigger headwinds, arguably, that they face, also did much better than expected. And I think that's what's supporting the markets now, despite the rate rise. It's just we'll see how long that after effect from a good earnings season lasts when we're going to have otherwise what we think is going to be kind of persistently rising expectations for policy rates.
And expectations for policy rate will also drive the dollar presumably higher because it is about rate differentials. And what does that do to the multinationals in the U.S.? Does it mean you favor more domestically oriented stocks?
I mean, that makes sense, and I think it is also part of the explanation for how well European companies did, because with the weak euro, you know, certainly being able to export at better prices, but then for U.S. companies, it would argue for an orientation towards domestic-oriented, perhaps small-cap stocks. They're not going to be facing that currency headwind.
Okay, the CPI tomorrow, what is that going to signal as to where the Fed has to go? Are we anywhere near peak inflation in the United States?
Well, we should be, but we also need to be careful about focusing too much on the current monthly inflation. I mean, don't forget that monetary policy works with a 12 to 18 month lag. So what the Fed's already done, we're really not going to see the full effect of that for probably a year. So if, you know, and we don't think the Fed's doing this, but we also don't want to think that, you know, depending on the number we get this month, that should lead to a big change in the policy. They've got to calibrate what they're doing now and the effect of that on inflation in a year from now. And, you know, just to acknowledge the challenges that they face, that's not an easy thing to do.
Is there a pivot ahead for stocks that you see?
What you've got to imagine at some point, given how far we think rates are going to continue to go up, you know, the whole point to that is to slow growth, because that's really the only way that they're going to be able to get inflation back down to target. You know, some of these transitory factors really should prove to be transitory, but there's still, well, there is now a lot of entrenched inflation. The only way to get that down, particularly wage growth, is through slower growth. And that's got to hit profits at some point. So it's just when is the market going to start paying attention to that is really going to be the key question in terms of performance over, you know, arguably the next year.
Are there alternatives for stocks at this point?
Well, You know, it's a good question.
I mean, alternatives that work.
Well, exactly. Yeah, alternatives, whether they're going to go up or down is the question. You know, we're actually more short duration than we were, so certainly don't see treasuries as an opportunity. You know, basically, in terms of our equity allocations, are actually outside the U.S. On one hand, the opportunity is outside the U.S. If this is the market where you're going to have the biggest increase in rates, you probably want to look for markets where you don't have such big increases in rates. Our overweights are to EM Asia, China specifically, and Japan. We also like Eurozone investment grade credit, where you've got pretty good valuations or high spreads relative to the risk. But you're right, it is selective at this point, perhaps having to wait for a better entry in the months ahead.
Dan, always a pleasure. Appreciate it. Daniel Morris, Chief Market Strategist at BNP Paribas, with us this morning. As we look ahead to the market open this morning, futures indicate a mixed open. Dow futures right now, they're up 38 points, a rise of about a tenth of a percent. The S&P E-mini futures up only a point, and the tech-heavy NASDAQ futures right now, they are down 19 points. That's down two-tenths of a percent. 10-year yield, 278. The 2-year at 321. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak.